It's time for a breath. Chronic stress is epidemic. We all know it, but how many of us daily, actively are doing something about it? Former pharmacist and current MD, Bal Pawa, offers her book, The Mind-Body Cure, as a reminder we can amazingly affect our own lives by paying attention. I'm Robin. Stay tuned for Tributaries. Thank you so much, first, for your advice that we are our best doctor.
You're welcome. It is indeed a very important message for people to realize.
As we all know, stress can either be a creeper or, as you experienced by being in a horrific car accident, a sudden onslaught with years of major complications. So I think we all could benefit from a 101 on the autonomic nervous system.
I just want to begin by saying that stress is not always bad. Stress is a part of life, and there's good stress and bad stress, but it's when stress becomes chronic and pervasive and all-consuming that your body is bombarded with stress hormones, cortisol and adrenaline. And our body wasn't designed to be in chronic stress. So if you look at biologically and how we've evolved our neuroendocrine system, this stress response was designed so that if we were exposed to a stress, we could just fight or flight, get out of the way. And then our autonomic nervous system, which is like a motor in our body, would allow us to speed up and then slow down. And when we slow down, then our chemistry changes because our stress hormones turn off and we're into rest and repair. So the opposite of fight and flight is actually rest and repair. And many of us don't talk about that. And you hear in the news stress is causing sickness. You hear about how there are symptoms of stress such as headaches and muscle tension, insomnia, irritability. And in fact, it's astonishing to know that 75 to 90% of the symptoms that we treat as doctors in the doctor's office are actually manifestations of chronic stress. But our medical system has been designed to become an intervention model rather than a wellness model.
Oh, yes.
So we've been throwing a pill at every ill. As you know, Big Pharma has a pill for every ill. And so we've become accustomed as patients to saying, okay, give me a pill for this. I can't sleep. What can you give me? I have heartburn. What can you give me? And I'm depressed. What can you give me? And we as doctors, we learn about the physiology. We learn how the body is this beautiful mechanism of holistic and unified systems, but we break it down and we start treating each symptom with a drug. And very few of us physicians have now come to realize that maybe we have to go to the root cause. Integrative medicine means going to the root cause of what the symptom is rather than just throwing a drug at it.
Right.
And that's how
I just wanted to say, and I should have said this initially, that our audience for Tributaries is very well aware of this. So in speaking to us, I would like to say that you're not talking to the pill-popping population of the world.
That's great. So the integrative medicine physicians and functional medicine, they do look at diet, lifestyle, exercise, and sleep. But I went beyond that and I said, what helps us to make decisions for our diet? What helps us to motivate us to move or to sleep better? And that's where the autonomic nervous system comes in. So the autonomic nervous system is a very complex neuroendocrine system located in your brainstem. And it will take cues from external dangers, of course, because your brain is constantly scanning the environment for threats. But it is also inextricably linked to your thoughts. So in the past, we might have had saber-toothed tigers chasing us, but now those saber-toothed tigers are more internal, fears of loneliness, fear of COVID, for example, fear of losing your job, fear of not having enough money, fear of being lonely or isolated, alienation. So all those fears still travel on the same pathway that was designed to help you run away from a tiger. So those tigers in your brain, those fears, we can't run away with. We carry it around. So if we're not aware of what thoughts we're thinking, these thoughts then input into your autonomic nervous system, and then you're either into a default setting of stress, chronic stress, cortisol, adrenaline, where you catastrophize, or some people have become more aware and they're able to default to the more rest and repair, which is what I call the brakes, gas and the brakes. So that, in a nutshell, is your autonomic nervous system, and I could go a little bit deeper into the vagus nerve and the polyvagal theory if you would like, or if you would like me to expand on that some more, I can.
Yes, and hearing about the work that you did with, I guess we could call him your mentor at Harvard.
Dr. Herbert Benson.
Yes, hearing what he said to you about turning on your vagus nerve, rest and digest, those brief words could take us a long way, couldn't they?
Oh, they certainly could. Imagine, you know, if people knew, number one, that they have an autonomic nervous system, number two, that most of us default to the gas with the cortisol, adrenaline running all the time, but number three, what if you could turn on the brakes and you could rest and repair your body? So Dr. Benson, Robin, was a cardiologist, and he treated stockbrokers, and he watched how the Wall Street, you know, how adrenaline-driven they are. So they would come into his clinic, and I happened to be there when I was training with him, and they would come in and very, very fast-paced, you know, smoking cups of coffee and go, go, go. And their system was on all the time. And many of them had high blood pressure, increased heart rate. So they were having physiological effects that he was treating as a cardiologist. And then he said, well, what if I could teach them some of the Tibetan monks' techniques? He had gone to the Himalayan mountains and studied with the Tibetan monks. And he thought this was fascinating, that these monks could sit on top of a mountain where it was minus, you know, 5 or 10 degrees, but with their autonomic nervous system, they could regulate how fast their heart was beating. They could even generate sweat. And he thought, how fascinating that they have such control over their autonomic nervous system. And they were doing it through controlled breathing techniques, through mindfulness. So he brought some of those techniques back to his lab at Harvard, and he got all the gizmos and gadgets to be able to measure heart rate, blood pressure, sweat, muscle tension. And then he would hook them all up, and within a few weeks of training, these guys were able to compartmentalize. They were able to turn on the relaxation response, drop their heart rate, drop their blood pressure. Many of them even went off their medication. And he said, wow, I'm on to something. As a cardiologist, I've been just throwing drugs at them, beta blockers and high blood pressure medications. So that's his work actually began from a physiological level as a cardiologist. And then he expanded it to include mindfulness for pain control, for menopause symptoms. And he started doing studies for immune system and noticed that people who meditated more had a better immune response. So then his research started to spread. And now, of course, universities at UCLA, the Cleveland Clinic, they're all using mindfulness-based techniques for many things, not just for the cardiology portion of it.
And that's where the linear goes out the window, and you can just see how all of the systems can work together. Now, a key piece to know, and part of the beauty of your amazing recovery, is that it is true the baby steps can help. It's taking 5 minutes, which even sometimes is too overwhelming for someone, isn't it?
It is, and I think a lot of people are intimidated because they have a very racing mind. We call it the monkey mind. It's just constant thought, thought, thought. And we produce 60,000 thoughts a day, Robin, and if you look at those thoughts, many of them are repetitions. They're just repeated from yesterday. But if we want different results, we have to think different thoughts, because thoughts are the language of your brain and your feelings. When a doctor asks, how are you feeling? Feelings are the language of the body. But if you want to change how you're feeling, you really have to ultimately change your thoughts, right? So changing your thoughts, if we become aware and become conscious of our thoughts, then you're actually making some inroads in the neural pathways of your brain. So you actually are changing your mindset from an illness mindset to a health mindset. And may I tell you how, as a physician patient, how I came to heal myself, and maybe that will help your listeners to
Please.
See. I was a pharmacist before I went to medical school, and then when I graduated, I was working very, very busy obstetrical practice. And go, and just type A, superwoman, you know, being a mom and a busy doctor and doing it all perfectly. And literally, I was hit by a truck, and I was pregnant at the time, and I had just finished doing a delivery myself. And driving home, when I was hit by a truck, I then became a patient, went back to the same hospital I had just left. And that was an epiphany for me. I lay there in the stretcher looking up at the ceiling, suddenly completely out of control. I was no longer controlling the situation. I was at the mercy of being poked and prodded. But that began a very big insight for me and a transformation. And my road to recovery was 6 or 7 years, which included a lot of surgery and tons of medication. And I was a pharmacist, so I'd filled all these prescriptions for people. And now I was taking antidepressants, painkillers. And when you have a traumatic accident, there's the physical and the emotional component. And the medical system, I know it's the same in North America, United States, and Canada. We have wonderful health care. We have great intervention. But we rarely look at the patient as a whole. Each specialist looks at us with their lens. But there are not a lot of doctors who will try to put it together. And I think that was the missing piece. That was one. And the second deficit was actually just taking control and taking charge and having faith in my own ability to heal. And so I actually went to Harvard to get training. I couldn't deliver babies anymore because of my shoulder. I had ruptured all the capsular tendons and broken bones, so I had to do something. And when I went to Harvard, it was more to get training how to do counseling for patients. But it transformed me personally and professionally. I completely changed the way I practice medicine. And what I can tell you is that if a patient comes on board and reclaims their power to take charge of their health and firmly believes that they play a role in their healing, it is a huge component to sustainable health. So when I say you are your best doctor, it's an awareness. It's a conscious awareness that, yes, I have to be accountable, I have to be responsible, and I have some control over my autonomic nervous system, because as a patient, you know your mind the best. You know how you react to it. So when you take charge, it actually helps the doctor as well. And it's a winning combination when you have a doctor who's passionate and wants to help you, but they see you taking charge and being curious and asking the right questions. That's a winning combination. And that's what slowly got me. Within months, I was off my medication. I was meditating. And you had said earlier, you know, an hour a day in the morning. I started with just 10 minutes in the morning and then 10 minutes at night. And then I would do a couple of mini meditations. You don't have to spend an hour. You just have to remember to regulate your nervous system. And maybe if I have time, I can demonstrate some techniques that your listeners might like to know how to regulate their nervous system.
That would be wonderful. If you shared even one, would be great.
Okay. So the autonomic nervous system is so complex, with all the nerves reaching down to almost every organ in your body. But one of the main highways is the vagus nerve. And it's called the wandering nerve, the vagus, V-A-G-U-S. And it is connected to your heart, your lungs, your gut. So we often talk about the three brains and the polyvagal theory. Your gut, sometimes you get a gut feeling before you actually register an event. Sometimes we talk about the emotional impact on your heart. But the most powerful technique is breathing. So when you take a deep breath, inhale through your nose, hold it for about 5 seconds, and then exhale. Make your exhale longer than your inhale. You've just turned on your vagus nerve. And the three components, I just called it BMW because it was so much easier. The breath is the most important, because as a human being, we breathe 23,000 times a day. We don't even think about it. But I actually had to learn how to rebreathe when I went to the Harvard training program, because we often breathe very shallow, and a deep breath turns on the vagus nerve. And the mindfulness is very important, because your mind is always racing. But if you can just focus your mind on the present, just using all your senses to be in the moment and calm your mind down as you do the deep breathing, that's very helpful.
Yes.
And the last one is the word. When you exhale, if you could just say a word, amen or om, that is very powerful, because I actually witnessed changes in the EEG when somebody is doing these three things. So normally your brain has very erratic brain waves, but when you do the breath, mind, and word together, it changes the brainwave patterns into an alpha state. And when you're in alpha state, you produce DHEA, serotonin, endorphins, all the neurotransmitters that are pro-healing, pro-repair. You're in rest and repair mode. So that is the powerful internal pharmacy that we have built into our nervous system.
Absolutely. Now, a quick question, Val. I'm not sure I caught what you meant by the M with mind.
So M is for mindfulness,
okay.
Using your mind to become still.
Yes.
And often we'll have, our thoughts are racing all the time, but
right.
It really helps if you just focus on your breath and just say, in this moment, I am safe, I'm whole, I'm complete.
Okay.
And using sort of a mantra, and if you use the word amen or om, that's a really powerful way to calm down the brain waves, which
yes.
Then feed back to your nervous system.
Right. Now, my yoga teacher always said, if you focus on your breath, it's impossible to focus anywhere else. So that's kind
that's
of an
right.
automatic, follow the breath in and out, then there you are.
Yeah, it's so powerful, and you think it's so simple, the breath. It's, you know, this type of meditation has no side effects. It's doable. It's sustainable. It can be portable. You can do it almost anywhere.
It's portable, yes.
Yeah,
I appreciate you sharing that so much with us. And I'm curious, in writing your book, The Mind-Body Cure, breathwork is, of course, as you've just mentioned, universal. And yet, you do have dietary advice. Now, dietary application is not nearly as across the board as breath. And I'm wondering what considerations go into writing about dietary advice when you're doing a book.
It's very common knowledge that we have to eat healthy, largely plant-based, good source protein, good fats, phytonutrients. That's very, very common knowledge. But what I focused on, Robin, is that the decision maker is your mind. So mindful eating, being very aware of the choices you make. A lot of people are eating out of stress right now. You've heard of the quarantine 15. People are gaining weight, emotional eating, stress eating. So I focused a lot on what choices are you making, staying awake and being conscious as to the foods you eat. And then that all ties in because your gut, your food that you feed your gut, the gut is where 85% of your immune system is located. And if you're stressed, if you think about this physiologically, when you're running away from a saber-toothed tiger, your body was designed that all the blood flow would move away from your gut and go to your muscles. So it allows you to run. So if you're in chronic stress, your blood flow is not going to the gut properly. You're not absorbing your food. So I want people to be very mindful when they eat, be very present about the choices they make, and actually use all their senses when they're eating a tomato. Look how red it is. Look at it, smell it, taste it, and actually taste your food. You will digest your food better when you're in rest and repair, or we also call it rest and digest. So my chapter on the food has a lot to do with where is your mind when you're making your choices for food? Where is your mind when you're actually eating it? Because you're going to absorb all those hundreds of dollars you might spend on supplements are going out the window if you're not in rest and digest mode.
That's so true. Now, I would like to have you share some of what you've learned about fear. There's a galaxy of fears that we can pick and choose from. Is the breath your first step?
Fear, first of all, is very subjective. It's what your mind gives meaning to. So it's really training your mind that before you have an immediate reaction, because our body will default to stress. That's what our brain was designed to do. So a reaction means you don't think about it. You just go to that place of fear because it's going to protect you. But a response is where you actually stay awake, you're conscious, you make a deliberate, measured response to the situation. So that's where engaging your mind always and staying awake and realizing that your mind can give meaning to a situation and reframing it so that it works for you rather than against you. So that's how I look at fear, is that fear is very subjective and it's open to interpretation. So if we leave our body alone, it will automatically go to fear because that's what we're designed to do. But as human beings, we have to cultivate an elevated emotion and awareness so that we start practicing consciousness. How are we responding to a situation? Not reacting, but responding. And this COVID crisis is a prime example. How are you responding or reacting? And the ones who are reacting, they're manifesting so many symptoms. So that's about fear. And then your second comment about breath, I mean, the first breath we take as soon as we're born is the first time your respiratory system actually has air in it. And the last breath you take is when you die. And all the breaths you take in between birth and death is called life. So breath is absolutely integral to you being here, being present, so that it just makes sense to learn about breathing and control breathing, because through the vagus nerve, you can actually change your autonomic response.
Yes. Now, as a mentor to future leaders in health and wellness, what is the first premise you address with that group?
So I've been teaching at the UBC Faculty of Medicine, and I take those opportunities. For example, I teach hypertension, and I talk about the mind-body connection, that yes, you can treat hypertension just with numbers and drugs, and sometimes we do have to throw drugs at a very severe hypertensive. But when you start looking at examples, you notice that the blood pressure goes up when there's a lot of stress, when they're not sleeping, when there's psychosocial issues. So I encourage younger doctors to explore the psychosocial aspect of a patient's life and say, well, what's going on? What's really bothering you, Mr. Smith? And so it starts with appreciative inquiry into their psychosocial lives. And then I expand by giving them good studies because they always want science and evidence-based medicine. So I show them the studies on how mindfulness-based stress reduction can help. And those are tools that you give to the patient. So involving the patient in their care is a very vital piece of having a sustainable, good health model. And I think doctors are not doing that very much because of the time restrictions. So if we could, this book, the premise of this book was to give people the tools and they should reclaim their health and have a toolkit so that they can exercise good habits.
Earlier you spoke about being at the mercy of being poked and prodded when you were admitted into the hospital after your accident. We're not at the mercy of life, but considering that you've learned so much from your accident, and so many people say cancer was the best teacher they've ever had in their life, did that accident and your continued learning have a profound shift for you in recognizing the grace in the world or the invisible force that is perhaps at the base of nature?
Oh, Robin, you hit the nail on the head. It was absolutely, you know, a literal awakening because I was just go, 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 and I would have been the doctor who just stayed in that model of healthcare because that's what I was taught and that's what I learned. But I look back at that, and during those 7 years, I didn't feel like it was a gift at all. I felt it was horrible. My life turned upside down. I had a terrible 7 years of hell, really, but I look back at now and I see what a gift it was because it was a huge awakening. And I would not be where I am now, the infinite possibilities, the expansive health care that I've been exposed to, the functional integrative model and all the research I've done, I would not be here. So I think it was the best thing that happened to me, and I've reframed. So that's why I called the toolkit in the book the Reframe Toolkit, because I actually reframed that accident and said it wasn't the worst thing that happened to me. It actually was the best thing that happened to me because it transformed me personally, but also helped me to transform the lives of thousands of patients that I've seen since then.
Yes, yes.
So I think it was a gift. Mm. And I think a lot of people who go through a very big illness start to look at life differently. And I certainly did that. And I slowed down and I'm no longer a type A. I meditate every day. I'm more responsive, less reactive. And I think, honestly, I'm a better physician because of it. And I think that's
absolutely
the most important thing.
Yes.
And a better human being. Yeah.
Here's to mindful breathing and paying attention. Many thanks to Bal Pawa for writing the book, The Mind-Body Cure. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, or sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Podcasts are on iTunes and hopefully your favorite podcast place. If not, let us know. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.